Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. Among us who's joined us this year to be our pastor in training. Her name is Lori Ortiz, and a little while back, God got a hold of Lori, and she decided that she was going to make a difference and make a change. She's actually been making a difference and a change literally for a really long time. She's a contractor over in the Bay, and she restores hardwood floors and does an amazing job with that, but somehow something happened inside of her, and she started to try to follow God in different ways. And so it took her to Berkeley, where she finished her first year of seminary last year and is in her second one this year, and she's made this phenomenal commitment to come all the way over to Sacramento to be with us, to learn about ministry together with you all. And so Lori has been observing in Godly Play and with our music team and AV, and now this morning and for weeks ahead, Lori's going to be with us as a pastor in training, and we're all in this together. Joan and Greg are leading Team Lori to help to support her and watch over her in love for this year. So I'm going to invite our children who are making a difference to go. There's Becca and Bambi, and our young friends are going to go out to Godly Play. Godly Play is our children's ministry. Oh, fabulous, Eliza. Thank you. Good work. Bryce is going to go that way, and the Schnack family is on their way. And there goes Hunter and Wolfie and a friend. In Godly Play, our children learn the stories of our tradition, and they gather together. They touch those and see them in front of them unfolding in their own age-appropriate ways.
This beautiful morning, our gospel reading is from Mark, chapter 10, verses 35 to 45. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to him and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." And he said to them, "What is it you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory." But Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" They replied, "We are able." Then Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink, and with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the 10 heard this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, "You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be a slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom.
For all the strides we've made, for all our blessings, we've fallen far away from truth. Turning our face away from this hurting race, we turn our face away from you. We wanna be your hands, your feet. Without words, we'll let our actions speak. For every broken heart, for every widow, for those without shelter from the rain, we lift our eyes to you, looking for answers, but we have been called to ease the pain. Your feet. Without words, we'll let our actions speak.
Matt slipped a little thing in there. Do y'all know what an aerodyne is? Raise your hand if you know what an aerodyne is. Okay, it's a bicycle. And if any of you try to talk to me while I'm on the aerodyne, it'll go like this. So I don't, even if you're trying to give me money, I don't know if it'll work out for us. Holy crap. I cannot speak when I'm on the aerodyne. It's true. Like, we're out in public and we run into you all, or you run into us in very interesting places, and the gym is one of them. And Matt told me a story this week about also running into somebody over at Orphan, which is a restaurant. He ran into Deneb, who is one of the chefs in our community. He's actually in the room this time, so I'll just, you know, break that. He's right there. And all means all, because he does have a Seattle Seahawks shirt on. Oh, well. This is how things get tested. I love you both. Matt ran into Deneb at Orphan, where he was going to have breakfast. And Deneb was at Orphan waiting on some friends. And he had two friends, Stephanie and Kelly. They are part of a local nonprofit. It's a big nonprofit, but a local branch of March of Dimes. Maybe you guys have heard of that. And I looked it up. It's an amazing mission that the March of Dimes has. It's to improve the health of babies by preventing birth defects and premature birth and infant mortality. And so Deneb does some work with them every year on this huge fundraiser. So he was there for that meeting, and Matt walks in, and then the women arrived. And so that's always a moment, because you never know what's going to happen then. As a pastor, are you going to just say, hey? Are you going to be introduced as a friend? Are you going to be introduced as a pastor? You don't know. So Deneb took that big step and said, this is my pastor, Matt. So then there's the other part on us, because depending on where you are, you're not always sure you want to be introduced as a pastor. I'll claim that for me. You can claim it for yourself. But, you know, there are places and attire where I'm like, really? But he did it. And it was beautiful, and he introduced Matt to the women. Deneb is not someone, you know, usually who considers himself, he said this, I'm not just like a worthy example of faith. He said that, you know. Deneb's just a person who wants to change the world. That's Deneb. And last year, when it was time for Winter Sanctuary for us, he changed our world because he asked this really beautiful question: what can I do for you? It's the question of a servant: what can I do for you? And I think it's likely, although I don't know for sure, that he also asked that same question to his friends from the March of Dimes: what can I do for you? What do you want me to do? Well, when he asked us, our answer was just like, oh, just cook dinner, Deneb, for 120 people and spend as little money as you can, please. Make it really healthy. Use local food. And if you could teach others who don't know how to cook, and then make them feel really welcome and very useful with their time so that they are part of this effort in our very poorly supplied kitchen that has a residential refrigerator that really doesn't hold all the food that you need it to hold. That's all. I forgot to say, do that. How many? 7 nights. For 7 nights. Not one meal. Yeah, for between Christmas and New Year's. And honestly, there doesn't seem to be that much thought on Deneb's part about suffering through onions or suffering over a hot stove. There seems from him only to be joy at the ability to serve others, to be the hands and feet through feeding people. What can I do for you? It's the same question that Jesus poses back to James and John this morning in our reading when they dare to ask, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." If you're a parent, you know how that comes, right? "Mommy, I just want you to say yes, no matter what. Okay, promise?" You're like, let's hear the question. No, just promise. Right? But seriously, that's kind of how it is. And it's a way that human beings have behaved for generations. It's the same kind of question that Dr. King lifted up in the sermon, the very last sermon that he preached. It was on this very same text back in 1968. It was called The Drum Major Instinct. And in it, Dr. King speaks really powerful to this question, even as he weaves his own life and what our country is going through at the time in 1968. He has very keen perceptions, of course. But it's the question he heard too. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asks. Our human desire is to be out front, and Dr. King lifted that up in the image of a drum major. That's the person that leads the band. We want to be out front with little thought to suffering in the kitchen behind the scenes and what it means to be truly great. And Dr. King's sermon, I appreciated it, the time I was able to spend with it this week, and here's how he imagines Jesus answering those James and John. "Oh, I see. You want to be first. You want to be great. You want to be important. You want to be significant." Well, he imagines Jesus saying to them, "You ought to be. If you're going to be my disciple, you ought to be significant." I imagine back in Dr. King's day with so many marches and parades and so many people that were surrounding him that he had a lot of folks around him asking the same question. That they wanted to sit, one at his left and one at his right, or walk, one on his left or one on his right for that great photo opportunity, you know? They wanted to be ready to move into political power right alongside him as he took all the risks and he rose in popularity and total acclaim. See, our human instinct makes this his sermon no less prophetic today for all of us and calls into question our desire to be the ones who are close in to the power, to be the one who's going to get that next promotion. We want that top spot. We want recognition for all of our hard work and our success. After all, we did it. We pulled ourselves up by our boots. We do all the good that we can. We deserve that. And that's what we're hearing this morning, I think, from the brothers Zebedee, James and John. What do they want Jesus to do for them? Well, it says they want him to grant their request for special seats. Not working in the heat of the kitchen, They want to be in the front of the house. Actually, not just in the front of the house, because God forbid their table be by the kitchen. They want to be at the best table in the restaurant, and they want Jesus sitting at their table, and they want to be on his right hand and on his left. Unless we use James and John as our own whipping boys, like we're any better, one preacher, Janet Childers, reminds us that all of us have Zebedee DNA in our own gene pool. It's uncomfortable to look at this part of ourselves. I think it's a little bit embarrassing to admit out loud sometimes what's really going on in our heads. I know that's true for me. Because the desire for so many of us is to really be out front. And somebody's going to say to me, no, I'm really not an out front person, I swear. I'm shy. Okay, fine. You don't want to be out front. You want to be the power behind the throne, quietly pulling all the strings to make it happen. Either way, it's something that we want to be recognized for all the good that we're doing. Now, some people may call this being arrogant. Some people may say James and John are getting a big head and won't be able to fit through the door very soon, right? To dare and ask this of Jesus. We can call it whatever we want, because their request exposes our human condition. And it becomes problematic, not because it's like what's going on in their head, but where the problem comes for them is they actually say it out loud to Jesus. And Jesus being Jesus, he answers with two more questions. What I appreciate, Matt kind of alluded to this last week, he doesn't scold. He's not scolding. Remember last week when the rich man said, how do I get through all of this life and go deep in my faith? Jesus loved him in that question. Just loved him first. So it seems like Jesus is loving here and teaching, choosing to teach, not to scold, not to criticize, not to say, you guys, you prefer glory to self-sacrifice again? You want to be first instead of last? Seriously? Do you not hear me? He simply answers, you don't know what you're asking. It's like when Sophia says, Mommy, I just want to have my birthday party with 35 people. Really? Are you going to do dishes for an hour and a half after Daddy ruins everything in the kitchen? Cooking for you? You don't know what you're asking. When someone says you don't know what you're asking, they know something that we don't know, right? And what's their answer? We can. We are able. He says, are you able to drink the cup that I drink or be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with? We are able. That's what they say. Are they able? Are we able? Jesus finishes that exchange with this. The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. We're ready. I'm not sure they even understand the question. I think that's where it gets complicated. And I think it's the question for all of us this morning who seek to root our lives in grace, to grow in faith, and out of that, to find some creative ways to reach and love, to come out about our faith, to say we want to make these choices because we go to church and are followers of Jesus. But is our yes, I'm ready, the yes that Jesus is seeking? Because if we say yes, we're ready, it means this, that whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave to all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And I just want to make an aside here about that word ransom, because some of us go to this automatic thinking that ransom has to do with a certain death on a cross, dying for all of our sins. But ransom here is really referring differently to an action that liberates a particular group of people out of their bondage. And the way Jesus is offering to liberate people from bondage is through healing them, or feeding them, or loving on the least of them, of us. One scholar, Ched Myers, helped me understand it this week when he talked about identifying Jesus as the embodiment of the way to nonviolence. I think that's how I found my way around to Dr. King. That Jesus has come to serve and to give his life away, give it away, and refuse to save his own life. Jesus goes all in. And that phrase, as a ransom for many, refers to the price that's actually being required to get, like, an at the time of the gospel, an indentured person out of enslavement. It's the actual price that you would pay to someone who is enslaving another human being to set them free. That's what was in his mind with the authorities in that day and time. So Jesus is saving by liberating those who are enslaved and held captive. And he does this by taking a firm stand and resisting the powers that think it's okay to be slave owners. The powers that challenge that God's love is for all, that all means all. He takes a stand. And those actions that challenge evil power without directly seeking our own power and glory require no small amount of strength and an enormous dose of hope. You have to have some sense of hope if you are going to be like Jesus or Dr. King and stand in front of the powers that oppress. And you hear this when Jesus doesn't deny to James and John that there's going to be glory for you. He tells the other 10 who are getting all prickly that some of them can be great too, but they have to be servants. And some will be first by actually being slaves of all. It's the hands and feet. It's such a shocker, really, that glory is not going to be found in all that hard work and suffering that we undergo through serving other people. That's not where the glory comes. The glory is in the reversal of the fortunes that get worked out by God through our reaching in love, if that makes sense. And it begs the question for us and for church, is how do the ways we reach in love as a church reverse fortunes, do they? On those who live on the margins. See, reaching in love over these last 5 years at the table, it's looked different, and it's not always easy for us to figure it out. We're trying to be in this together. So one of the very first things we ever did way back in the beginning was to participate in Run to Feed the Hungry. And lest you think Matt and I are the icons of servanthood, the truth is they changed their route and ran by the church. You know, 30-some-odd thousand people were going to run by our church. So what do? If you're someone like me who has sort of a base instinct about the thing, I say, let's open the doors and let everybody use clean bathrooms. That works. That feels like reaching in love to me, especially if you're a mommy or a daddy with strollers and you got a pile of diapers and you're trying to do all this. And you're working with people who have taken their day off. That's a group of us. Ooh. Taking a day off Thanksgiving. What more indulgent day? to reach in love. And the way that we reach in love here in Sacramento, not everybody knows this, but on Thanksgiving, we have, I think, as of last year, the largest race to raise money for our Sacramento Food Bank, which is how we raise food for loaves and fishes and all many feeding programs here in Sacramento area. So that was our first way to try and reach in love, and we're going to try and do it again this year. And you can be on a team and do a 5K or a 10K, or you can just be out front and cheer, and our fabulous music team's going to be there. People stop running for them. Take pictures and dance in the street. You already heard me talk about it with Deneb's help. We've grown, and we have Winter Sanctuary, and we didn't invent that either. It's another church that organizes churches in Sacramento in the harshest months in winter so that we can provide shelter, hospitality as shelter and food for those unhoused guests that come here. This room becomes a theater. We show movies. And over the years, we've had teams of folks. Yeah. Reach in love as they clean and serve and cook and love on these many guests. We're going to host Winter Sanctuary again, and that sign up will be on our website really soon. Another thing we tried that came to us from one of our folks who was in a kitchen table. She works for Planned Parenthood, and you've heard us talk about Teen Success. It's a program through Planned Parenthood where mommies, teenage mommies, agree to not have another baby for at least 18 months and to go to classes on parenting and to stay in school. And statistics show that if you do that over 18 months to 2 years, your likelihood of having a second baby is reduced an enormous amount. And they have like a 97% success rate, Planned Parenthood does on that. And so one of our folks realized as she was working with these moms and she bought all these cool prizes for them that they were fighting over the diapers. Because if they could get diapers as a reward, then they didn't have to spend their own money on diapers and they could get to school easier. So we heard that and we said, well, we can buy diapers for 60 teenage moms for a year. And we did that. And then we expanded it to include Tubman House. And Tubman House offers 18 months of housing and support so that Sac County's homeless parenting or pregnant teenagers and their kids can get busy living instead of just worrying about surviving. And we got some PJs for them and books and backpacks over Christmas, and we think we might do that again. So you can look for an announcement next month. Then another way we thought, oh, we can always reach in love is because there are disasters that happen on our planet every time we look around. And if you're part of the United Methodist denomination, you may know we have this Committee on Relief. And they are ready to go into action whenever something happens because we support them during the year. All of our money, 100% that we donate, goes to whatever area it is. And most recently, you know, not Nepal and not Haiti, it's in Lake County because they've been devastated by fire. And one of our kitchen tables has taken the lead because her uncle lost his home. And you even see physical things back there that we're trying to get to them, to assist them. Because when you lose everything in fire, it means everything. Like your birth certificate, your hard drive's gone. You can't even prove who you are. And while all of these efforts seem really important and really worthwhile, and it seems like they address those who live on the edges of society or are in harm's way, it just seemed like we could do more. So we've been struggling with that. And as our little church moves to becoming sustaining, and our own community grows and our giving increases, our finance team put their heads together and they said, you know what? We're going to step towards tithing. 10% of all that we gather in our deep commitment cards, these cards that are in your worship folders, 10% ultimately of all that comes in, we want to step into giving that away in different ways, not just one way, but we really want to think about this. So we want everyone to really be clear that in a few more years, we imagine that we might get to giving 10% of our generous giving to start new ministries where other people, just like yourselves, can root their lives in grace and grow in faith. And we're moving towards this with 2%. And then in a few more years, we imagine doing the same by putting 10% aside little by little to care for this beautiful building so that in the same way that we stepped into it and did not have to lay these brick and mortar or ship these windows from San Francisco, other people will just walk in here and be loved. And maybe they'll weep, or maybe they'll meet their new best friend. And in a few more years, we imagine that 10% of our giving will be devoted to simply reaching in love in whatever ways and forms that we deem, year after year after year, supporting places and people and organizations right here in our community. And we're moving in that direction by setting 2% aside this year. We're also well on our way to tithing to the Global United Methodist Church. And the reason that's also important is that's why we can give to that Committee on Relief I told you about. Because it exists. It exists. And 10% of our monies will go to support that. Because words can only go so far to bring us back to God. And we hope that this will help us to be a responsible and sustainable community that continues to find more and more ways and to wonder out loud how we can reach in love. And in this way, we hope that we are expressing our willingness to drink the cup of Jesus, to come to this table, and to live out of our baptismal covenants. It's not going to make us popular. It really isn't. It's not really going to make us very rich either. And I'm not sure it makes us any better than any other church that is doing their best either. Which is maybe why it gets so confusing for James and John, and maybe for us, when we think we're following Jesus and doing these things and making these predictions of how we can give and how we can grow. Because see, what happens, even in all of those efforts, the trouble is that in the midst of it, Jesus is shaping an alternative type of community, which even still goes on to define what is great over and against the definition that we usually define greatness, our culture, America, getting ahead. More is better. And sadly, James and John, as close as they are to Jesus, they don't get it. They really don't get it. I don't know if we all get it. I think that we're trying to get it. And here's one of the ways that I think we can test that out. When we think in our own heads, the question, ask it. What do we want Jesus to do for us? When we ask that question, if this is our answer, keep it like it is. I'm really doing good here. It's really comfortable for me. Without too much disruption, I can still get to church. I can go to my kitchen table. I can give a little. If you want to give me more so that I can keep on following you and keep on doing the thing I'm doing, and then my influence will get better and bigger, Jesus, and all the more better. Just bring it on. I'm comfortable now. I can stay this way. If that's what we want to say to Jesus, I think we have some work to do. Because think about this. What would other people want to ask? I met with a woman this week. And I couldn't help but think over and over, what would she say, Jesus, please do this for me? Because she found herself all alone just a little while ago in a mental holding facility. And she was there because she had just tried to end her life with alcohol and pills. And she heard her soon-to-be ex-partner answer on the phone when she called for help, I don't feel responsible for you. We're just about to get divorced. Which is why she was in there. And in a culture that shames those with mental illness and suffering from depression and looks at divorce as a failure and women as disposable anyway, what do you think she was asking Jesus for? And then if she asks Jesus and he grants that, what does that say is going to happen in our world? What if you're a powerless child asking Jesus what he can do for you? And what if you're a powerless child who has spent days and months and then years in a foster care system that moves you from house to house to house in the midst of a culture that spends millions of dollars on fertility treatments while we let our own children go hungry and homeless? If we grant that child's wish for what they want, what is that going to do to our life? If we're a person who can't walk or see or hear in a society that values those who are able-bodied and gainfully employed and normal on the education spectrum, if we're the victim of discrimination or incest or prejudice or hate, then we're likely to ask Jesus to do something like make the world fair, please. Make the world just, or just make my neighborhood just, or make my home safe, make my bedroom safe. Make it loving where I go to work. See, our question changes what we ask Jesus for depending on our situation or our location or our gender or our age or our race or our class or our sobriety, right? Depending on the voice that's asking, the answer can become an answer that completely transforms with hope our world. Because Jesus will stand with us against those powers when we ask. So that becomes our question. Who will we serve? And what do we want Jesus to do for us? The culture that boasts of success has measured in where we sit on the right or the left? Or do we want to serve the Jesus who calls us to find our freedom in the cup that we share at this table, all means all? In the waters of our baptism, by reaching in love to our neighbor, being servants? You see, we too are included in Jesus' description of his life as giving himself as ransom for many. Because in order for us to be freed from our own delusion that we are somehow self-sufficient, that we are somehow independent and not connected and self-made men and women who have pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps, we need Jesus to save us from that self-understanding. And that's what he means when he says he will ransom us too. His life and his death challenges not only our assumptions of the benefits of power, but the very power that is, with the surprising and life-giving revelation that as we lose ourselves and find these ways to reach in love, and sometimes make mistakes, but do the best that we can, we find ourselves getting closer to him. And I think that was why that sermon from Dr. King was so powerful to me, to think of what happened to him just a few months after that. Just a few months after that, he died. But he knew in those last words of his last sermon, our human need to be great, to be first, and to be the best. And so he switched it on us, Dr. King did. And he said, you can be great. All of us can. And we're going to close by just listening to his beautiful and great prophetic voice. Let's listen to how he said it.
If you want to be important, wonderful. If you want to be recognized, wonderful. If you want to be great, wonderful. But recognize that he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That's a new definition of greatness. And this morning, the thing that I like about it, by giving that definition of greatness, it means that everybody can be great. Because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know Einstein's theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics in physics to serve. You only need a heart full of grace. Generated by love. And you can be that servant.
We can be servants of all as we root our lives in grace and grow in faith and find creative ways to reach in love and to listen to the answer to that question, what can I do for you, when Jesus asks it of you?